a fighting fury, we're from Tigerland. In any weather you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland. We never weak until the final siren's gone.
We are back Monday Night Live, TigerCast fans. Hope you're doing well. Thanks for tuning in from wherever you are around the world. A bit of a 50-50 weekend. We split the difference between AFL and VFL CB. Welcome, mate. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Wonderful to be back. And apologies, I've been absent for a bit of a while now. So, but I guess the unavailable list gets bigger. EJ's out with an injury, mate. EJ's on the...
He subbed out, and Grock, actually haven't heard from Grock in about 16 hours, so hopefully he's okay. I shot him a message, but hadn't heard from him, so yeah, fingers crossed he's okay. And Tiggs, hopefully Tiggs is doing well, and we'll hopefully see him on Wednesday night or something like that. But what have you been up to?
Not much, just had a bit of an operation about Friday week ago, so
feeling all right now?
Mate, it's weird. I had this hernia operation on the Friday, and on the Friday night, as I messaged you guys, I was like, holy shit, I've got a really good pain threshold, but even I had to drop a couple of the real big painkillers.
Yeah.
And then I woke up on Saturday and I was like, I was okay. And I thought, and I couldn't work out if I still had enough juice in the system that couldn't work out, but I've just progressively got better. But I got a reality check on Saturday. I decided to go for a walk on the nice sunny day.
Yeah,
didn't even get a block.
Oh, didn't really? Just cooked.
And had to turn around and come home because I just didn't feel right. So as much as I'm cruising around the house feeling like a rock star, I've got a little ways to go. So
fair. Oh, good to see you back up and about, though, mate. That's the important thing. We'll address this one straight off the bat. Like, if EJ was on, if I knew he was coming on, I was maybe going to ask for an executive order reversal potentially. In relation to the non-use of the I word, it's clearly not working because we're looking down the barrel of 14 players out now. So we may have to abandon mission on that one. It hasn't seemed to do what we'd hoped it would do, which we'll touch on very shortly. But yeah, we'll kick off with the one topic we do always have a bit of a chuckle at is the North Melbourne Death Ride Chart. We haven't done this for a couple of weeks. I've been a little bit slack. But we have updated it. Oh, I forgot the little graphic of the Bulldog. That's annoying. Anyway, the Kangaroos are up to 11 losses in total. They've had two losses in a row against the Hawks and the Bulldogs. They're still 16th, and we've still got pick number 3. This week, though, CB, is a massive game in the context of this pick because they actually have Melbourne at the MCG. So Melbourne and I think it's St Kilda, the teams that are sort of directly above them that we need them to start winning some games to create some separation.
They've got Melbourne, and then they've got Sydney in Sydney the following week. So,
I mean, if Sydney is serious, they should be getting up. And I don't know, has Tristan Jerry been confirmed isn't out yet with concussion? I don't know what's happened there.
I haven't heard, to be honest, so I do apologise. So, as much as my life is nothing, but because I can't drive a car till next, I get maybe a surgery sign-off on Thursday. My life is PlayStation, work... And just bumming around the house, patting the dog. I ain't got much going on. I still don't know.
What game are you playing?
Oh, smashing out a bit of COD, if I'm honest at the moment.
Yeah, okay. What's the KD ratio?
Oh, I'm running at about 1.5 to 2, which isn't bad for an old bloke with Ratchet.
I struggle to get to 1. That's really good.
But you got to be, all I play is Stakeout or Nuketown. So, and Stakeout's really good because you're stuck in a house. So you don't get all the crap, the wanky crap of choppers and all that. It's literally El Mano to El Mano. It's Molotov cocktails and an AK-47, baby. Let's go.
Just running through. Yeah, nice. Pretty much. That's so good. Oh, dear. Okay, so EJ in jail again. No, yeah, maybe. Not quite, though.
Give him time.
Give him time. Okay, so Jerry's playing, but Larky's not playing. That's a big out. Larky's a huge out. They lose a very, very solid avenue to score. So hopefully the Ds can get up. We're getting very close to locking in a top 4 or 5 pick here. And hopefully we can keep it at pick 3, but that's the state of play with the Death Ride Chart. So just keep losing.
Keep going, Wolf. You can do it.
Melissa and Lynn listening from Bali. Welcome from Bali.
Jealous.
I'm jealous. I might have to get some advice on how the Wi-Fi is over there, because I'll be there myself shortly. So fingers crossed the connections stay the same. All right, well, we'll rip the Band-Aid right off. We'll get stuck into the lesser of the two games, if we want to call it that. So we'll talk about the AFL first. Richmond got knocked off by the Cats, 18-16, 124 to 7-10, 52 by 72 points down at GMHBA. The Cats did a number on us, CB. That, look, as much as I know we liked a bit of banter and shit games along, they were pretty smooth and they did what had to be done. The first quarter, I thought we actually hung in there reasonably okay, but just lacked the polish and the finish to actually make the most of our opportunities. But then it was that second quarter where they just got off the leash and did all that damage.
It's a bit of a hard one to judge, because our first quarter, if you look statistically and what have you, our first quarter is really, really good, really competitive. We won the last quarter, but the two quarters in between, that was a pretty hard watch. And
yeah,
what you saw, and you put the on X, you put up the numbers of experience. What we saw there was a team, two-thirds of a team that is multiple preseasons, like they were so much bigger than us, so much better well-drilled, and actually more skilled than us as well. Like, and the amount of times they were forward of the ball, so when it turned, they were going, and we just weren't with them. And so they were very well coached.
Yeah.
Absolute lesson for us, to be honest.
Yeah, and like we sort of said during the week, it's about par for the course, right? They're in genuine premiership contention, and they did what they had to do. But if we're taking some small, and I don't want this to all seem like we're clutching at straws, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but we do have to look at the small wins in any of these games, don't we? But to have the second half only be 7-5 was actually, I thought, a really good positive, because I felt like that was going to blow out really quickly. And to outscore them in the last quarter, even though they clearly took the foot off the gas, I do fully acknowledge that. But the fact that we didn't then take the foot off the gas and just roll over as well was something. And there were times during the game, and I was actually on a podcast just before as a guest, and there was a Geelong person commenting saying that even they saw that Richmond moved the ball really well a few times early in the piece, and it looked really good. And I've actually got a video of that coming out tomorrow that we did. There was a few times we went coast to coast from quick ball movement. And to EJ's point, we've just got to keep pulling the trigger, don't we? Just go instinctively and see what happens.
Yeah, look, again, this is why I'm still so angry at Tom Lynch. Like, our structure was so badly affected by him being suspended through his own actions. So he's got to own it. But like I said, they wouldn't let us go through them. There's only about, I could count maybe five times we got through the middle. The rest of it, they just forced us down the line, which played to exactly how they wanted. Like I said, it's just, it was boys versus men out there, literally. And no disrespect to Geelong. They were just, well, we were talking triple figures. Even before the game was played, we were like, they should actually, you know, and it was looking like our call was going to come to fruition. But, you know, the key thing is our guys, more often than not, there's only a couple of games that I can think of. We're actually fighting the games out, whereas the Richmond of old would have laid down and they would have been north of three figures. So
agree.
So
that's what I like too. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact that we're prepared to fight the games out shows that they are trying to instill that fight at all cost culture. And I still took positives out of it. Out of a 70-point hiding, I still got some positives out of it. So
yeah, I didn't feel as bad walking away from that one, just because it kind of felt like it was going to be that way. There were some definite positives to come out of it, even from an individual player perspective. Morris Rowley Jr., comfortably best game for the club, albeit the circumstances in which he entered the game, which we'll talk about shortly, weren't the best, obviously. But it was nice that he had been showing that type of form in the VFL for at least a month. And I know he didn't get any centre bounce attendance, but what we were doing with him was playing him higher up the ground around stoppages. He was even up in the defensive 50 at times, helping work the ball out. And his pace, his line-breaking ability, his passing was really good as well. He did exactly what I was hoping he would do and translating it from VFL to AFL. And if that can be his norm or higher, then that's a huge win.
Yeah, agree. It was impressive, but here's the thing with him. Can he do it next week? One sparrow doesn't make a summer.
I reckon if he stays up around the contest, he can, because he's a confidence player getting his hand on the ball. If we revert to playing him deep as a small forward, he'll go back to getting seven touches. But if we can keep him involved, I reckon we might be a chance to see it back-to-back weeks. I know that will convince a lot more people. I definitely acknowledge that as a consistency thing at play as well.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
But it's one of those things you'd rather see it than not see it, which is good. What about Ryan Mantle, CB? I thought that was maybe close to his best game for the year, with maybe round one being the other contender.
Honestly, I'm a Mantle fan anyway, because I just like blokes who go hard. And he's, you don't question his commitment to the cause. He's had a quiet 2-3 weeks, to be honest, by his standards. So it was terrific to watch him come back. And he played. He was on Stewart, so he's on a good defender. It wasn't like he did it on a hobo. He actually played on a very, very good defender and turned it on. So stoked for the kid, and that's why he's in the team. So, yeah, wrap.
What I've liked a bit more about Mansell as well, it seems like he's reined in his aggression a little bit, because he was giving away some silly free kicks in the last month or so. And like, he's passionate, he's aggressive, he wants to hunt, and I get all that. But I feel like he's channeling it a bit better. But some of those goals he got were quite good. And at one point in time, he had kicked our entire score, which, good for him, maybe not so good for the rest of the club. But, yeah, I thought that was a really good game from him. Even Seth Campbell, in similar vein to Morris Rioli, you know, for maybe large chunks of the year, Seth was kind of hovering around that 8 to 13 disposal kind of game, which is in the, if you're not scoring goals, it doesn't really mean a hell of a lot. But to step up and get a 19 disposal game by being up around the ball more, I feel like that's a good evolution of his game.
But isn't that funny? So you've said one expression twice with Morris Rioli Jr. and now Seth Campbell, both up around the ball.
Yeah.
If only there was something our coaching staff could do with quick young guys at a centre bounce. If only there was something we could do with the three blokes in the middle with Nankervis. Change, you know, if we're getting done by 50 plus, put him in.
Yeah, and maybe this is a small stepping stone towards it. I really don't know, but it's nice to see them not just isolated down in the forward line. Like, they have so much more to offer and help out this football team with by being around the contest. There was even a few times where Mansell, Seth and Rioli Jr. were the ones in like a three-way weave triangle, whatever you want to call it, were the ones working it out of the back line to the forward line. And they're a hard trio to keep up with because of their speed. And if they get that connection and synergy right, it could be a good weapon for us.
Even Banks. Banks again.
Yeah, Banks had a good game. Yep.
Yep. So the young blokes, mate, the young blokes are showing signs. Yeah, admittedly, yeah, we're getting done, but there's still, I'm not even going to use that Brendan Boltonism, but there's things to go on.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Banks. Again, hasn't put a foot wrong. He was a part of a couple of slingshots attacks by running around the back and receiving handball. Just hasn't had a down game that I thought he would have playing in a new role. He's been super impressive, honestly, has been.
Well, let's talk. They're getting their first full seasons. Who's had a better year, Seth Campbell or Banks?
I mean, early days you would have said Seth Campbell, but if we're talking about consistency, you'd have to say that in the last 6 weeks, 7 weeks, that Banks might have him.
I would say right now, and it's not by much, but I'd probably say Banks is just, if we're talking a horse race, he's just hit him coming into the stretch. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's getting close. It's getting very close. Seth's probably had some quieter games, but it is what it is. What about Tyler Sonzi? He's another one that we know divides so many people. He found it enough. I think he had, 16 or 17 touches, went at 88%. But there was just maybe a handful of contests, maybe slightly less than a handful, that it felt like he didn't commit to fully from a physical standpoint, which is what catches the eye. Like, a lot of people may then forget about the accurate disposal side of things when you see someone sort of pull out of a contest and not go hard enough. It can be a really telling sign sometimes, can't it?
I have to be careful how I say this, because anyone who plays AFL football is not soft. They are weak. They are all very competitive animals in a very hard physical game. However, since the GWS, I haven't been... What I saw at the GWS game was a couple of efforts I wouldn't call worthy of Richmond manned efforts. So anyone who knows the Dimmerisms, what have you, let's use the term Richmond man. And again, on the weekend, there's a couple of times when it was his turn to go, And I think he could have been a bit more of a Richmond man than he was. So based on that, like, I'm glad he's getting an opportunity to show his wares because people have been asking for it. So he's getting his opportunities. That's on him. But, yeah, I'm not sold on him as much as I was in the first half of the year.
And look, he's probably going to get another chance this week as well. It's like a poison chalice, isn't it? I mean, he's getting the ball and using it well, which is actually really beneficial for the team. But then there's other things like that. That it's like, how detrimental does that end up being? I'm not sure. But like you said, he's been given the game time, maybe not in the position we thought he should get trialed in, but we can't help that. He's out in the park. He's now got to make the most of it and show everyone why he deserves to stay in the side. So it definitely sits squarely on his shoulders. Jacob Blight, I thought, had a reasonable game, 17 disposals at 100% efficiency. You don't see that happen all that often. And a team high spoils. You can't really ask him to do too much more. It was not a bad performance. Something to build on as well.
He had one bad clanger. Right. He did so much right, but he had the one bad clanger. And all people are going to talk about is that one bad drop mark. But he was very effective
mark.
Defender.
Yeah, chest mark, yep.
He was a very effective defender for the game. And I'll defend the back six because the way that ball comes in, you just wouldn't want to be a Richmond defender at the moment, would you?
Like, not with how Geelong were moving it through the middle. It was in some parts of that second quarter, it was almost a training drill with zero pressure. And there's you got someone like Jeremy Cameron down there who's a pretty handy goal kicker. And as much as Grein Myers pisses me off, he's a very good and accurate passer of the ball as well. So you can't give those guys space.
So widescreen TV has said Blight had some howlers. Blight dropped one mark. His disposal efficiency was 100%, to put it in perspective. Yeah. So I don't know how many more howlers you think that he did, but his disposal efficiency hit every single target every time he had the ball. So I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen a few people mention that about Blight over the weekend, and it's interesting what people, I suppose, see, and then it doesn't correlate back to the stats, but it must leave it a sour taste of some kind. My only gripe with Blight is maybe this is what Jay Tiger's getting at. I feel like when I watch him in the VFL, and this probably makes sense too because of the level of skill difference, but in VFL, I feel like he's a lot more confident in his own marking ability. And in AFL, he maybe spoils one too many that he could maybe mark. But that, I mean, I also then have to remember he's played 10 games. So there's still a lot of learning to happen, and that will get better and evolve over time. He just needs to trust his own instinct. He's a good reader and a good marker of the ball typically, which he has shown for multiple weeks at VFL level. And I just like to see him back himself to mark a few more of those just to keep possession rather than the spoiling.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think, for the rest of the year, I persist with him. I think... probably not the right time to talk about Tom Lynch and what do I think. But, you know, I think for the rest of the year, they should back Blight and Miller in for the key posts for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think he'll definitely get some more game time, especially with Bolter out for a couple of weeks as well with the curfew. Against EB, it kind of felt like early days, and I know Uze's mentioned this a few times, it just felt like we missed some really gettable opportunities. That Bolter missed snap, I'm not sure what was going through his mind for that one. Jonty Fall missed a couple, but I was pumped for him that he got one late. He did deserve that thoroughly. Yeah. And I think Elgar dropped a mark that he probably would have taken normally on the end of a really good play. It's a confidence thing, isn't it? Hugo missed one, and you look at the VFL then, which we'll talk about next, but I think they got 14 goals for. So that's where you're good kicking and they were able to pull back a lead. I'm not at all suggesting we would have reined in Geelong at the AFL level, but just the confidence it gives you when you hit the scoreboard, it's so paramount, isn't it? And we just keep robbing ourselves of a few goals a week.
Well, like when you're a bottom team, you need to make every post a winner, don't you? And we're not.
Yes.
And the thing is, we're not rewarding the effort from the midfield and the defensive group by missing those goals either. So it's pretty deflating in some ways. But, my take on it. There's just a comment there about Nathaniel Davidson. Can we talk about our fitness department? This thing just...
There it is.
Yeah. In defence of the fitness department, a lot of our injuries are contact injuries. So Thompson Dow, that's not a fitness or training issue. Even Harry Armstrong's injury, he's landed awkwardly in a marking contest of training. That's not a fitness issue. That's unlucky. Campbell Gray hurts his knee during a game. Dustin Clark does his ACL during a game. There's I'm only going off the top of my head. I'm sure there's others. So it's not a lot of the injuries aren't fitness and conditioning. Yeah, we can talk about Lawler, right? That's the obvious one. Hugo. But a lot of the injuries are contact or actually part of the game. It's not to do with that. Now, unless you're arguing the other side going, how are we bringing them back? We're actually holding blokes back. So
make sure on that, I mean, I think I might have flagged at one point, a few other people did, that with Lawler, I know he set out 6 weeks. So please, Kane Corn, stop saying it was 4 weeks. It was six. But is there, I mean, that still feels like a long period of time. And I really wouldn't have been against him getting rolled through the VFL to get the training running you do and the GPS numbers are one thing, but just that extra match conditioning. Do we maybe need to have a think about what we do there? And I trust the club. If they say that he was ready last week and they held him back a week, I'll back their word. And from what Serple said on the website, it just sounded like the way that tackle mechanism worked in the leg. It almost felt like even if he had waited 15 weeks and did 5 weeks in the VFL, the same thing was going to happen because kind of like Hayden Young. Hayden Young did one as well in a very similar manner. And it was more the motion. I would have been more pissed off if he was just chasing the bloke down the field and then it went. That would have been like, hang on, what have we done wrong here?
Well, it was...
If it's action-based...
It was a different part of the hamstring. And someone's brought up LaFau. LaFau played a full month in the reserves and got through a month of football before he came into the ones. So that's just one of those things. It wasn't if we rushed LaFau back.
That's it. It's like, how much more time do they need? I mean, they're ticking all their GPS and strength boxes and everything.
But they're playing. Like LaFau, like Judson Clark.
Yeah, they were playing full games. Yeah.
Playing full games. Like LaFau had played a month of football. It wasn't as if we've gone, six quarters of footy, bring him in. Like, it just happens. Football.
And you would argue that they were playing on harder surfaces that were probably a bit more brutal on there. So, like, if they were going to do it because of that or coming back too early, they'd probably do it in the VFL.
And the other thing as well, people calling VFL grounds cow paddocks. Let's get a bit serious, shall we? They're not cow paddocks.
Beaconsfield is. Beaconsfield shit, but the rest of them are pretty good.
Yeah, correct. I mean, there's some pretty good grounds out there. I wouldn't say, what's his name? Campbell Gray hurt his knee because he's on a cow paddock. It was in a contested situation. It has nothing to do with the ground. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think, like I said, if we were seeing them hurt themselves just by chasing a player, I'd be a hell of a lot more concerned than these random twisting motions in the tackle that maybe caused Sammy Lawler. It's so gut-wrenching, though. And that would have taken the wind out of the sails of the players. And I'm honestly glad that we're not going to try and bring him back this year. I think I read in the report that they're talking about potential surgery options as well. We know Dylan Grimes has something similar back in the day. I'm sure technology has advanced a lot since then. So whatever they do, it's around 2026 play, and I'm fine with that. The only thing I'll add on to the end of that is I don't think, like, seeing those injuries happen, and we've got obviously Jacob Bauer as well, which was very, very unfortunate with the ACL, but it's not really a cause to then say, oh, shit, we better not play any other kids this year. Like, we shouldn't be deterred from playing the kids
because
of these sort of freak accidents. It's you can't just hold off forever. Like, you've got to wheel them out there if they're playing well. It's just someone's walked under a ladder and smashed a window at the same time. And I didn't even see what when Hugo did his, but, I mean, he'd been playing AFL for, a month?
Well, his was near no one. He was in a passenger play and then the play had gone past and then he's gone. So he's just gone late early in the fourth quarter. So
He brought back the camel. I agree with you, Mark. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
And Koch did have some injuries early days as well, didn't he? And he turned out all right. So they're going to be ultra patient and they have to be. And we'll see Sammy Lawler next year. But just shit-ass luck, honestly. It was horrible to watch. Yeah. we'll go to the VFL now, because the VFL was a much more interesting game. Now, while we're reading out and talking about the VFL, I am going to run some Taj Houghton highlights just off to the side here that we can all have a look at as well. So we'll get that running in the background because, well, why not? Because the kid's a freak. The VFL team had a wonderful come-from-behind victory. They were about 35 or 40 points down at one stage and hit the front with 45 seconds to go, winning by 5 points. And it was, the scenes were unbelievable. The Harry Scott kick for goal was as clutch as you get, which is at the end of this video. Amazing, amazing fight back. And we were looking shit house in the first, in the second and third quarter. But Taj Houghton, folks, he is the real deal. I know people were a bit skeptical about him getting all these disposals against the Bullants, who weren't that great of a side, but he put on another clinic against Geelong. It was at 24, 25 disposals, a goal. And he just reads it so well, CB. He is crazy, crazy good. And Jaden Short was good as well. 29 disposals. I thought he was a bit slow to start, but at the end of the game, when it was on the line, he was pretty prolific. And I think he comes back into the team this week.
The kid, Taj Houghton, he's like another Shane Edwards. His hands him tight. He just, he's one of those guys. He sees things. He just sees things. He's ahead of the game. So I'm so excited. Harry Scott, if we don't put this kid on our books in some capacity, I'll fair dinkum spew up. I've been watching for a year and a half.
Yeah, he's had a pretty good sort of month or so, I reckon.
He's been pretty solid since he's come into the team.
Yeah, that goal was clutch. And, you know, the link-up play that we see between Houghton and Razzo as well was exciting. Razzo pushed further up the ground, was able to get a good chunk of disposals, kicked a couple of clutch goals. It was good.
But just Houghton's decision-making as well? So, look, I mean, he's in, mate. Let's face it. He's in. Pencil him in.
If he's not playing this week, there will be utter riots. There's no reason, unless he pulled up sore, that aside, cannot leave him out of the team this week.
And he looks like he's so really, far. He's covering the ground really well. Question for you. So, Jaden Short, how do you view his game?
I liked it by the end. I was a little bit iffy on him at the start. I thought he was a bit of a slow burn. But by the end, I thought he was pretty prolific in helping with that comeback at the end with his kicking and pushing up the ground and work rate. You know, he got 29 disposals, which is no mean feat. I thought he did really well towards the end. So I thought he was good. Yeah. What do you make of it?
I thought that the first quarter, he got about 9 or so touches, and it just looked like a current Jaden Short kind of game, getting the ball, but it wasn't really damaging the opposition. But then as the game went on, he got better after he got that massive knock.
Yeah, true. Good point.
So, I think two of the ins will be Jaden Short and Taj Houghton for sure.
Agree. I think they'll both be in. I thought Caleb Smith had an okay game as well. I thought I actually, for the first time, saw him put his head in the hole a few times to take some marks and get really contested. Steely Green Rocco had a really good game, 3 goals. Steely Green went back to the VFL and did exactly what I would hope he would do. He was involved in the play, taking overhead marks, got the 3 goals, was taking marks inside 50. I want to see him do it for another 2 or 3 weeks, but it was definitely a positive step forward. That kick to the inside 50 forward, we don't see that at AFL level. Give me some of that on a plate next week. And Trezise did okay too. I thought Trezise, I don't want to give away all the ins and outs, but he'll be another one well and truly in contention to come in next week, or this week, sorry, should I say.
And Kaczynski provided a good target up forward in the second half as well when he went forward. So we didn't have a choice. We had to move him there. But as it turned out,
I thought he was great, Cozzy. And, you know, that only happens because Josh Gibkiss was back playing. So, and I know Gibkiss...
So, happy with Gibkiss?
I'm wrapped he got through it. I mean, he was fairly rusty and didn't get a lot of the ball. Had some nice spoils. His disposals looked okay. But him being there was probably important to be able to throw Cozzy forward, which actually helped with the result of the game. So, I mean, reality is that Gibkiss will need another 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it might look like. Wrap for him to get through it.
Just, I don't care if he plays the rest of the year in the Magoos, just get him through 6, 7 games of football and get him right for that preseason. So
I don't know what his time on ground was. If anyone knows that, please let me know. I'd like, if I was to guess, I'm going to say it was between 45 and 50%, maybe even less. But yeah, he was, I thought he was good. It was just great to see him out there playing. The only other thing I want to talk about from that game, that number six umpire, have you seen anything more close to cheating in your life than some of the bullshit he was throwing out there? It was phenomenal. They had, I think, 34 or 35 free kicks. And some of the stuff that wasn't getting paid after it had been paid, for, it was honestly astonishing. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Yeah, you hope he's in the Bush Leagues for the rest of the year. He was a dead set disgrace.
It was horrible. It was horrible. I remember the live chat was going nuts about it. But good win from the VFL team. It's a really tough top 10 to try and stay in. So
and sixth on the ladder.
Yeah, there's a lot of positions to be gained just by winning. It was a good win. It was a very, very good win. So we split the difference over there. And
think of it this way. So my question would be, so Alg is out for four and there's 7 weeks left?
Yeah.
Would you not just play a few of these boys, Armstrong, Alga, those lads, Smiley, just play them in the VFL for the rest of the year and try and get them some finals experience?
Well, and that starts to creep into it, doesn't it? I mean, Armstrong seems like he's going to miss again this week, which is a little bit annoying, but then hopefully he'll be back next week for VFL.
Yeah.
And then Smiley might not be too far away as well. But yeah, you'd want to get him to go out there and try and get some more experience. So fire away, Hawk Tim, if you've got info, fire away.
Yes. But, if anyone else is watching the show, Hawk Tim, we'll keep it between us, Tim. Hawk Tim, we'll just keep it between us.
I found this interesting, Jay Tiger. I actually didn't know this until the game started and I saw the scoreboard that it was our home game and it was there. But but there we go. Tyler Young, someone did mention his name in chat. He also had a very, very good game. He had the game saving mark at the end, had some good spoils, actually went for a couple of runs up the wing. And personally, if it's me, I reckon he could step straight into the AFL side this week. And I actually wouldn't be shocked if he came in. If he does come in, it would be on the premise of Blight moving forward in the absence of Bolter.
But why would you move Blight forward when Blight's been playing defensively and Kaczynski just played half forward? So
it just depends if they feel they can get anything better out of Cozzy up forward than Blight. I'd be okay with, to be honest, I'd be equally as okay with either because I thought Cozzy did a really good job up forward on the weekend.
So keep in mind too, does Bolter play the reserves game?
So he should do.
Something to aim at?
He should do, yep.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
He might have to, I'd mention if he plays forward or back as well. Young was really, really good. He was really good. All right, well, that's the VFL done. Before we get to the preview, you're bringing back an old segment. I don't have a singer, a song or anything, but it's time for a real old school long run-up CB bloodbath.
No, this isn't. This one's pretty tame. So it's interesting that the themes I raise in this have kicked off on X and social media platforms, but the boys will confirm I had this written before a lot of shit's starting to take off online. So I call this an AFL love letter from a fan. Dear AFL, as I sit here, Bruce Springsteen's Racing in the Street, playing softly in the background, warm winter sun shining through the front window, a cup of tea in hand, I should be feeling okay. But I'm not. You see, the game I once loved, lived for, it's been hijacked. I thought I was okay, but really I'm not. Am I to blame? Should I have spoken up earlier? Was my silence consent? See, I don't know how to communicate my feelings to you anymore. I don't recognise you. And you no longer see or hear me. So maybe I just don't mean anything to you where I once did matter. I no longer matter. And I don't think I'm the only one who recognises this. Other people see you and comment the same. They say you've changed. It's not them. They understand the hurt and frustration that I'm feeling. But I know when you say, you do listen. You even have a fan survey that gets put out every year where we get to say how we feel. So you do hear us. But given we keep having the same questions asked of us and nothing changes, I feel I'm in a bad relationship. I see you nodding your head, but there's a distant look in your eyes. Imagine how I feel as I tell you that Stand is an abomination of a rule that no one asked for. 666 actually creates congestion in the forward 50 before a ball gets bounced, as we already have 12 people jammed in the 50-meter arc and the coaches can't slide the flanks up onto a wings anymore to create space. Umpires still can't determine holding the ball anymore. The person screaming into a mic at ear-splitting levels pre-game, during quarter breaks and post-game, the crap music blaring before and during games, and the gambling advertising when we know young men are getting hooked on gambling in a big way. So my confusion sits in a body that promotes so many social issues and causes, yet is happy to be complicit in something as bad as this. And we all know the side effects of gambling on people. And you don't even try to change. I tell you how I feel, but it falls on deaf ears. But then while I'm talking, you talk over me. You tell me people want a night grand final. I swear we've spoken about this. We had a falling out over the AFLX tournament, but we moved on. Now you want to bring in a secondary tournament which would run during the AFL season concurrent to the existing season. So while we have so many unresolved issues to get past, you just want to brush it all aside and do something we didn't even discuss. And I just feel confused because I get told you want 20-minute quarters due to player fatigue. Heck, we even got a player wearing a silly vest during the game day to combat this. But now you want to play more footy. And we talk about the talent pool being diluted due to expansion. But then you want to devalue finals by further Americanizing the game and having a wild card round. I guess where we discuss this, but you just don't listen. So please, AFL, listen to your longtime lover. Can we just work on our existing problems and get our relationship back on track before we can talk about exciting new ways to spice up the marriage? Lots of love, CB17.
Very good, very good. Yeah, it's the calls to have a mid-season tournament. I think the most telling sign that they really don't think it's that great of an idea or going to be well received is when they turn the ability to comments off. That is your first indication that they think it's going to go pear-shaped real quick. But what they can't turn off are the retweet comments, and they were very, very telling. And we've said this before, and I'm sure there's other club podcasts that say the same thing, but we see all these rule changes, we see all these things happen, saying that it's at the request of the fans, but I don't know any fans that have been on side with 666, the stand rule, none of it. So I really don't know where they're getting their data or information from, but yeah, there's more to fix first than there is by introducing a new tournament.
Julie Arthur's calling for divorce. It's a bit rough.
Calling in divorce.
I'll say this. To those people listening, please go onto the Richmond website. There is a link there to the AFL Fans Association survey from Cheryl Crichley.
Yeah.
I apologize myself for putting your name wrong. I do apologize. They work so hard on these surveys. Can you please fill it out? And if there are things that are annoying you, it's 45 questions, 5 minutes of your day. Please fill it out and just make your voice heard. It's the only chance we've got. Just keep talking.
Agree. couldn't have said it better. Hawk Tim, yeah, saw about the point not being at it. That's interesting. I'll have to go back and have a look at that. Well, we got the win anyway, so that's all that matters. Stola, this was the first thing I thought of too, that they've always been so dead against State of Origin because players won't play, and now they want an extra tournament in the middle of the season. Like, okay, well, which one is it?
It's funny. That when I was writing that thing, the State of Origin thing came into my mind, and I couldn't enunciate it. I couldn't express it properly. So NRL do it really well. They never walked away from it, right? We did. The players walked away from it back in the 90s, early 2000s, because I'm old enough to remember this, right? So, and clubs didn't want their stuff. Clubs didn't want, like, I can still remember, I'm that old, I can still remember Tony Hall doing his knee when his own teammate, Collins, who was playing for Victoria, dragged him down and he did his knee. Two Hawthorn players involved in one contest, State of Origin, one guy does his knee. And Tony Hall was a superstar, like, he was a jet. So, I don't think, and I tell, oh, we bring it back once every 4 years, or we just, how about we just address the existing issues? Because there's a lot of issues in the game. Laura Kane, sorry, you weren't up to the task and you've left an absolute shit fight to be sorted out this off season. So wow the fans with your wonderful ideas, or get your AFL mouthpieces like Sam McClure, Purple Barrett, all those dickheads to push your points that no one wants to hear and no one's worried about. I tell you what, when people are watching a game, don't know if you're a Richmond supporter, do you reckon they're getting upset at the lack of interpretation on holding the ball and all the bullshit that's going on? Or do you think they're watching these decisions going, oh, that was a bit rough, but geez, I like that 666, or we really need an AFLX type tournament. What do you reckon they're talking about? Seriously. Yeah. They just need to just stop the bullshit.
And I know we don't often agree with some of Kane Corn's sentiments, but it was nice to see him as someone in mainstream media highlight the bullshittery of the stand rule and that it's not really doing anything. And hopefully more people caught on to that, because it was always all about improving the amount of score per game. And even when it first came in, I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but they had statistical data to back up that the average score per game had not increased at all since the introduction of the stand rule. So I think we're just doing it for the sake of doing it now. But
Can we stop tailoring the game to 10-year-old children? Oh, their attention span can't go past this. Guess what, dickheads? Guys like me that are 50, we're the guys bankrolling the games, because we're the guys who can afford the memberships, the family memberships and everything else that goes with it. How about you listen to us for a change rather than little Johnny who's going to watch anything anyway? Like, enough of this crap and dumbing it down. It's a game that survived 150 years for a reason. Long before and long after these current Muppets leave the game. Seriously. Yeah, correct.
I'll never listen.
Another one.
Yeah, the third man.
Why do we need to wait and hold the game up for two lumbering dinosaurs to get there? Throw the frigging thing up. There's four umpires. Surely they can all count to two. I'm getting going.
Travis, that's one of my bugbear ones. I hate that rule. But anyway, it's well said, CB. And, you know, looking through the chat here, there's a lot of people right behind you, mate. So I think there'd be a lot of opposition supporters right behind it as well. It's just a little bit madness. But we'll push on to the preview of the Essendon game. Now, this one's an interesting game, CB, because I feel like it's a game that we should be a chance of winning. We should be competing a lot better and having a lot better outcome than what we had the last 3 weeks against the top four sides, which, yeah, we were never going to compete against. But the Bombers have got their fair share of players sitting on the sideline. Their confidence is down. Our confidence is down as well in a lot of ways. And I genuinely think, at the risk of this sounding really cliche, but in a lot of ways, it's almost both teams' grand final. I mean, they should both be up and about and both believing they can win. So we need revenge for Dreamtime as well to tie 2 point as well, which is spot on. But let's talk about the changes first. It feels like, well, it feels like there's going to be four forced changes. So we're going to be missing Lawler. We'll be missing Bolter due to curfew. We're missing Hugo Rellsmith with the hamstring and Jasper Alga with the foot. So I don't know whether we would go any more than those four for changes, but on the basis of them being out, who do you have coming in? And if you've got any other outs, share that too.
Nah, look, I think Hotton, Blight, Short, Trezise are probably the four obvious ones that would come in.
You say Hotton, Short, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just furious at Tom Lynch. I mean, imagine if we had Tom Lynch there to guide that forward line now against an undersized Essendon, we should be almost be starting the game as favourites. I know, as crazy as that sounds. Not Blight, sorry. Apologies, Kaczynski. Apologies. Yeah, good point, Skadoosh. Kaczynski, sorry. But, yeah, this is where I'm just pissed off. You know, Bolton, it is what it is. We knew he was going to be out, but the blokes who should be there. And I guess the question is, what do you do with K-Mac? Because to me, I mean, so they're going to have Setterfield. So Setterfield is going to take out one of our main on-ballers, right? He'll go on a pure negative tagging role. And Goldstein's a pretty handy rucker still. He normally gives Nank a pretty hard time, right? So what do we do in the midfield to change it up? And this is where I think if we can get a bit of speed through, Essendon aren't quick through the midfield, I don't think. And I think McIntosh on the wings will really expose him. With his two-way running on a wing, with Hugo out, it's an opportunity to get K-Mac out of the middle and put something a bit more pace around the pill.
So their wingers from last week were Xavier Dersmer and Lachlan Blackiston. I'm not actually – he must be a youngster. We obviously know who Dersmer is. Interestingly, so Caldwell's going to be an out for them this week. I didn't realize Ridley is out. Is that confirmed, Super Friends? Because that's a big, big out. I thought he was going to be in. If he's out as well, and they're looking at just Laverde, and I'm not sure who else will come in to defend down there, but that could make things really interesting for us up forward, and it may mitigate the absence of Tom Lynch. It also could highlight how important it would have been to have him too.
Can I just say, that young caddy for Essendon is a superstar.
He's going to be a jet, isn't he?
That kid can seriously play. Like, he's cool. That kid's outstanding. He's an outstanding talent. So he's the one, if we can keep him quiet, you know, that goes a long way to helping us as well.
So for me, the changes I would bring in, Tash Houghton just categorically has to play. If he doesn't, it would just blow my mind. Jaden Short comes in. I would bring Tyler Young in to release Blight. And James Trezise, I think, slots in on the wing that Hugo was on. So I would play Hugo. I would play Trezise and K-Mac on the wing. I don't mind the idea of that CB. And with Jaden Short coming back in, the obvious conundrum is, where does he play? Now, he's categorically not taking Sam Banks' spot, as far as I'm concerned. That would be an absolute slap in the face that cannot happen. For the interim, I would not be against Tom Brown sliding forward, who can mark. He's a lovely kick for goal. And then Shorty can play on the other halfback alongside Sam Banks. And I think we might benefit ourselves at both ends of the ground by doing that potentially. Could that be viable as a short-term fix for our forward line and to get Shorty back in?
The other thing is, could you put Shorty in the middle? Or could you have him as part of the wing rotation with K-Mac or...
He could. I mean...
Because the flip side could be, Short comes in on one wing, you've got K-Mac on the other, and there's another... Like, they could bring in Steely or someone else in. They could have something totally different in mind.
I guess it comes down to, do we think we can get something of an advantage or a gain from Tom Brown playing forward? Like, is he going to add a point of difference with his marking, his long-range kicking? Is it something that... Are we better off to try that? Do we get a gain there, do we think, or not?
Well, he scored goals last year. He scored every game he played forward last year. He scored, so he can definitely slot him and grab him.
Yeah, I think... and look, nuclear, I'm definitely not against Jaden Short playing on a wing either. I think if we're not going to move Brown forward and for Short to play half back, then yeah, Short will have to play wing, half forward, well, wherever it might be, which is fine. I think he can adapt.
Trainer looks a bit tired. Could Trainer be the sub? Short goes in and Trainer's the sub.
Yeah, maybe. It could. There's so many ways it can work, isn't there? Like,
yeah, there's a lot of ways, yeah.
So interesting that Ridley's listed as a test. I didn't realize that he was going to be a test. So there you go. That would be a big out. Who else could say Caldwell? That's a big out too. So if we look at their forward lines, we've got Nate Caddy, who you said before is going to be a jet. Peter Wright. So we're talking about matchups. We're going to have Ben Miller down there, and it's going to be one of, I think, Tyler Young or Jacob Blight, depending on what we do. Who would you send to who in that area of the ground?
Well, see, for me, I've still just got Blight, Broad and Miller as my key defenders. So I think Miller should probably go to 2 meter Peter, and Blight will have to start. Well, actually, you know, I'll probably start Broad. I'd nearly put Broadie on Caddy.
On Caddy?
Yep, and have Blight as the taking the third best forward and interceptor.
I think,
because
yeah,
Broad can play tall. Broadie can play tall.
Yeah.
Strong. And he could body Caddy, but Caddy can jump. That's the problem.
He's
Caddy
got some springs, doesn't he? He's got some wheels too. He's a good player. Now, the Zach Merritt's probably one that worries us a little bit too. He's such a big, big ball winner. And like I said, because of where both teams are at, players like Merritt and Nick Martin, and Durham, whoever else, they're all going to feel like that this is a game they need to be up and on their game for. Do we look and try and do anything on Zach Merritt, or just go head-to-head with Taranto, Presti, Hopper and Ross and roll the dice and see what happens?
It doesn't matter what you think, mate. We don't play tags.
Don't anymore. We've moved away from it.
Yeah, they're just going to have a shootout. They won't put... And that's my point is, so we need to find a way to put speed around the pill. And I wouldn't be against, because Taranto is a good goal. He's normally a pretty good goal scorer. I wouldn't be against Taranto starting forward and putting someone just to change up the midfield mix and then bring him in. I know they'd never do it because Taranto's top dog in the midfield with Hopper, but we got to get a look at what something for the future, because I mean, just sticking with what we got. Yeah, just my thoughts.
And Taranto moving forward at various stages has a positive effect on the half forward line too, with some experience, a bit of class around there as well. So yeah, we're going to have to see something, I think. But in some weird way, it's almost like where we could end up with an advantage is our forward line if we play our cards right, just because of how depleted their back line is. Like, I'm not sure if Mason Redmond's due back in or not. They've obviously got no Mackay down there as well. If Ridley is genuinely a test and doesn't play, that would be massive. Zach Reed's out for them, which is a big out too. Who would be your preference?
Is Laverde still playing?
Yeah, Laverde's down there. So he'll be one that's down there.
Yeah, he's a good player.
So who would he go to if you were them? Who would you send him to?
Well, Laverde's playing defense, is he? I thought he's playing forward.
He played fullback last week, according to the team sheet. I must say, I didn't watch the Gold Coast game, but according to team sheet, he was swung into defense.
Yeah, look, I mean, we've got to put some height down there now that Boulder's out. So it's just basically, if it's Cozzy, if it's Blight, however they do it, he has to take the tallest guy, doesn't he?
And this is why, I think Cozzy could do a genuine job, because him playing as a defender for so long now in our VFL program, he's kind of got that art down okay. And I think at a minimum, he's going to have the contest really, really well. And if he gets on the end of a few years, so be it, we'll take it. But whoever plays that role, the primary job description is have the contest and don't let them intercept marks. So if we can have someone to occupy Laverde, who else would... So, yeah, Ridley's the other one. I remember, was it this year or last year, where Ridley played his first game back from injury and we almost exclusively kicked it to him down the line? I think he had about 16 marks or something ridiculous like that. Yeah. So, again, if he plays, or whoever it is that's playing down there, we've just got to make sure we find different methods where possible. Like, my hope is that Essendon aren't as defensively good as Adelaide, Geelong and Bulldogs. We're setting up the ground quickly and we can maybe get a bit more opportunity to go through the middle and try and expose them that way and generate some good scoring opportunities.
The one thing I haven't seen is play this year, what Dimmy used to do. We don't play dirty ball anymore, do we?
No.
So if we've got a smaller forward line, we're probably a better chance if it's blower hard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ground balls rather than air balls, because we don't have the marking power to pluck it. So I don't know.
And Nick Martin as well, J Tigers flag, Nick Martin. He's someone again for them who can play back or forward. I mean, again, we won't necessarily tag him, but you want to make sure you're not letting him get, you don't want him getting 30, 35 touches in a clear space, do you?
No. Don't want anyone getting those top touches.
No. But so it's going to be, it's a genuine game. I think we should consider ourselves a chance. And like, I'll be devastated if we lose this game by the same margins we've lost the last 3 weeks. So for me, these next couple of games, the Essendon and West Coast game, I think are going to tell us a lot more about our season than the three games we've just had, because we're playing against teams that are, whilst above us, they're further on their development, but they're closer to us in terms of ability level and where they're at currently. So we give ourselves a bit of a 50-50 chance. To Jacko's point, very good to have Nankervis in rucking this one against Goldie. Samson Ryan, I get we had to give him a shot, but obviously he didn't have a great game there. But yeah, big, big game coming up, CB.
I think I don't see Essendon a deserved favourites to go in for obvious reasons.
For sure.
But I don't see why we couldn't win it.
Well, with that being said, what's everyone's final tip, including margin, for this one? Chuck them in the comments and we'll pop them up on the screen. CB, who's winning and by how much?
Tigers by 15, Hotten to kick 2 in his debut.
I'm sold that he's debuting. I will not hear otherwise that he's not making his debut. I'm excited to see him play, CB. Actually, before we get the rest of the tips, on the assumption that Hotten plays, number one, for the love of God, do not make him sub. That will just don't do it. On the assumption he's not sub, where do you see him playing bulk of his football at AFL level this year? He obviously had some CBA attendances in the VFL. I don't know whether that will happen in the AFL, but where do you see him playing?
Mate, him and Seth Campbell, high half forwards, double threat. Get him up there. They're quick, they're skilled. Get him, don't have him deep. Get him up there around the ball. the kid is Grease Lightning.
Oh, definitely don't have him deep. I mean, we've got to find a way to play him exactly like he was playing in the VFL, up and around stoppages, utilize his quick mind and quick hands. And yeah, you just got to unleash him at the G in front of a home crowd. So what better way? Surely by Wednesday, we're seeing some type of video that he's making a phone call to someone saying that he's playing.
Now, approach this with a degree of humor, please, viewers. I know, Melbourne, you're sick and tired of breaking shit and burning shit with the recent whatever troubles you've got going on in your shithole city. However, if Tash Houghton isn't named on Thursday, feel free to burn down Punt Road. That's all I'm saying.
Look, we could fast track the redevelopment substantially if he's not named on the field. We could knock down the entire complex by
shit. Yeah, maybe you could get ahead on the Jack Dyer demolition. Take a brick.
Hold up the existing wall and knock it down, and we'll get it done a bit quicker. I'm going to say the Tigers. I'm going to say by 10 points. I just think we've got to set ourselves for this. Like, I know we joke about other clubs saying it's their grand final, but this needs to be our grand final. We need to. And I know there's the train of thought that we don't want to win too many games. Stuff that. Let's get some excitement. Let's get some momentum and get another win and prove a few people wrong, I guess. But
yeah.
Hot in the sun, better not. And, well, this is the other thing, Jay Tiger. I still think we need to be on some type of mission where we have to try and hit 100 points by some point this year would be lovely. And this would be our next best chance to do so if it's not pissing rain, I guess, on game day. So, well, that is a wrap for tonight, folks. CB, thanks for jumping on, mate. Appreciate your time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in from wherever you are. We appreciate all the love and support. There'll be videos jumping out on YouTube. There's a video going up tomorrow with a bit of analysis on some of our ball movement against the Cats, so feel free to check that out. There's Tarj Houghton highlights up there. We've got Behind Friendly Lines happening on Thursday with Bomber Banter. And what else? We'll be team selection at some stage as well. Yeah, it's going to be a big week, and hopefully we can get a big crowd out there and we can see a win on what day is it? Saturday we're playing? Saturday night, I think.
Saturday night.
There it is.
There you go. A bit of cold chisel for you.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. But until next Monday, folks, stay safe, stay warm, and go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Smash the dirty filth.